Part 2, The Key Excuses Be Gone Principles. Quote, every mind must know the whole lesson for itself, must go over the whole ground. What it does not see, what it does not live, it will not know. Unquote. That's from Ralph Waldo Emerson. Introduction to Part 2. Each chapter in Part 2 illustrates one of the seven principles of Excuses Be Gone that I've personally explored and applied to my own life. Yet I'm leaving out any remnants of my scholarly research persona and instead sharing my unbridled enthusiasm about what it feels like to live in this new way. While I'll share my discoveries with you, it's my hope that you'll share my excitement through your own experience. I've included exercises at the end of each chapter that will help you to put these life-changing principles into practice. Chapter 4. The first principle, awareness. Quote, thinking without awareness is the main dilemma of human existence, unquote. Eckhart Tolle. And, quote, it's the awareness of how you are stuck that makes you recover, unquote. That's from Fritz Perls. Lifelong, set-in-stone thinking keeps you stuck, often without your even realizing that you're stuck. Since this type of mental activity can't lead you in a new direction, becoming aware must be the first step to getting rid of your excuses forever. Cultivating awareness is indeed the preliminary activity in the eye-opening experience of meeting your authentic self. Living your life oblivious to your thinking patterns and beliefs day after day, year after year, is a habit that encourages and elevates your ego or the false self. Eckhart Tolle states that awareness and ego cannot coexist, because awareness encourages and elevates your authentic self to be the center of your life experience. Although the false and authentic selves are mutually exclusive, I believe that knowledge of both is valuable. The way I see it, if you're going to practice an excuses be gone life, your primary relationship needs to be 100% with your authentic self. Who you truly are originates in a formless, invisible world. Scientists acknowledge that all particles, including you, emerge from an energy field of no-thingness. It's spirit that gives life, and it's to spirit that all life returns. There's very little room for ego here, since it clings to the false belief that you are your possessions and achievements. Becoming mindful of your true essence leads to awareness of your magnificence, your divinity, and your unique power to create for yourself whatever you feel is your destiny here on this planet, beyond any and all excuses. When awareness is your reality, you don't need to explain your shortcomings or missed opportunities. Instead, you transcend the pull of ego and move into a totally new dimension of higher consciousness. To put it simply and bluntly, if you don't realize that you no longer have to be stuck in your old thinking habits, then the habits will prevail and persist. This chapter introduces you to what awareness of the elevated experience of life actually feels like. From excuses to awareness. Breaking old habits requires noticing that you're creating impediments in your life, and that these impediments have become excuses for so-called limitations. For example, if you're averse to risk-taking and tend to choose the safe or the easy path, this has caused you to erect mental barriers. Such barriers are what I'm calling excuses, and they give you a way out. So when it's time to try something new, or to take a step that might result in failing, becoming the butt of criticism, or losing a contest or competition, or anything at all that puts you on the path toward becoming a stronger and a more self-reliant person, you come up with the same old excuse and avoid the risk. This is all an exercise that starts and ends in your mind. It's habituated thinking you rationalize by saying that it was inherited or foisted on you by well-meaning, albeit cautious, parents. Simply being cognizant of your excuse-making will open you up to vast arenas of new possibilities. You can begin this process by paying attention to the false part of yourself that believes in limitations. Simply observe the thoughts in your mind and the feelings in your body and note when they don't resonate with your authentic self. Yet you don't have to change or fix those thoughts and feelings. By becoming aware of your true being, you only need to pay uncritical attention to the ego self, and it will recede gradually and naturally in the light of your awareness. Remember, you're not just the temporary shell that you call your body. You're a divine essence who is limitless, formless, and infinite. When you notice your ego's chatter, you discover the ability to overcome long-established habits, and you begin to see all that you've been blinded by in excuse-making. Awareness leads you to your highest self. Ego leads you to your earthbound self. When you let the divine grow within you, awareness will be what you bring to all aspects of your life. As a Hindu devotee was once told, quote, the blossom vanishes of itself as the fruit grows. So too will your lower self vanish as the divine grows within you, unquote. Letting the divine grow within you involves sincerity, service to others, kindness, and reverence for all of life. Endeavoring to become aware encourages authentic thoughts to grow and appear in your inner world, and so will your lower self vanish as the divine grows within you. Let me share with you how awareness has been such a boon for me personally as I've changed some long-held thinking habits. In the opening chapters of this book, I describe two big excuses, genetic and mimetic, that many of us use to explain away what appears to be our failure to change the habits that plague us. As I read The Biology of Belief, the phrase, perception controls genes, kept attracting me. It triggered something in me that I hadn't considered before, the idea that the way I think about and perceive my world can overcome my DNA and my genetic inheritance. This means that I can rewire my internal circuitry and process physical or health problems from an entirely new perspective. If I were to stay unaware of my built-in ability to influence my genetic program, I'd be stuck believing that those things were outside of my control. So I've become increasingly aware that my mind has power over my environment, which means that when my body is off track, it's because my beliefs are off track. All my life I've heard that the one thing you can't change is your DNA, and I've always nodded in agreement. With my current awareness of the power of perception, however, a whole new world has opened up for me. For example, I have a history of infection and discomfort in my chest and bronchial area, and I've tended to feel that this is an area of weakness to be concerned about. A minor sore throat appears, which proceeds to some coughing and then produces green phlegm, followed by some difficulty breathing, and I head out to purchase some antibiotics and go through the same old process until the infection and discomfort ultimately disappear. Yet doing the research for this book, part of which involves putting into practice what I'm learning and writing about, I've moved into a new mental state. I now encourage myself to apply awareness rather than my old routine, and I seem to skip over those days of discomfort and the annoying antibiotics. In fact, I'm approaching everything about my body with a new awareness. Rather than first reverting to ways I've used in the past to process early signs of a physical malady, these days I shift to a level that allows me to mentally suspend my ego and even my body. Then I tell myself something along these lines. My perceptions or beliefs control my environment, my body, which is the environment for all illness, my genetic structure, and my DNA. I have the power to see this situation differently than I used to. Inherent within me is the power to create an inner environment that isn't susceptible to illness or disease. When I know that I have an option of awareness, I'm able to send away a possibly painful episode. I'm using all of the powers that this approach holds to talk differently to my body, and not only with respect to potential bronchial infections, I'm also employing it with sore joints, muscle pulls, cramping in my calves, stiffness, and any of the multitude of physical inconveniences that crop up in a 60-something body that loves swimming, running, walking, and doing yoga and other exercises on a daily basis. The key is to be aware that awareness itself is available rather than the same old tired, ego-dominated approach. The reason that awareness of awareness is so powerful is that it immediately puts me in touch with a dimension of myself that knows, here in awareness, all things are possible. That statement leaves nothing out, including the ability to realign with Source and introduce my genes to a whole new set of beliefs. Reading about and processing these cutting-edge scientific ideas triggered my entry into awareness. But it was my willingness to work on applying it where only old thinking habits previously resided that brought me to this new level where I feel as if I have an all-knowing friend with me at all times. This friend is called awareness. Here's another example of the power of awareness to alter some long-running thinking habits. Just being conscious of the fact that you are exercising can lead to better fitness. A recent Harvard University study published in a February 2007 issue of Psychological Science tracked the health of 84 female room attendants working in 7 different hotels and found that those who recognized their work as exercise experienced significant health benefits. The women were separated into 2 groups. One learned how their work fulfilled the recommendations for daily activity levels, while the other, the control group, went about work as usual. Although neither group changed its behavior, the women who were conscious of their activity level experienced a very significant drop in weight, blood pressure, body fat, waist-to-hip ratio, and body mass index in just 4 weeks. The control group experienced no improvements despite engaging in the exact same physical activities. The study illustrates how profoundly a person's attitude can affect her physical well-being. So if your daily routine keeps you on the move, start thinking of it as exercise. It may be enough to move you toward your fitness goals. Notice the opening line of this article, which said, "Just being conscious of the fact that you are exercising can lead to better fitness. Awareness takes you out of your customary thinking." As for me, since rewiring my thoughts to influence my body and even my DNA, my reality has changed significantly. Today, when I feel a heaviness in my chest or get a sore throat or pain in my joints or even a headache, I first begin noticing without judgment. I simply pay attention by observing uncritically and allowing myself to focus in a curious, gentle manner. By turning toward my higher self, all of ego's fears begin fading in its light. By becoming aware, without falling into ego thoughts of pain, disruption, annoyance, or creating other mental barriers, the symptoms move on through my system, which is in a state of higher consciousness. Where I once had a lifelong thinking habit that I didn't have the ability to adapt my genes to my perception or to rewrite my genetic codes with my beliefs, I now live in a new way. I gently notice my old ego-based beliefs whenever I note any kind of bodily malfunction. Awareness leads me to think totally differently, and it, sans ego, has put me into an instantaneous healing place on many occasions. The many paths of awareness. Awareness doesn't come to you exclusively from your intellect. Hafiz, a Persian poet in the Middle Ages, explains it this way, quote, "O thou who art trying to learn the marvel of love from the copybook of reason, I am very much afraid that you will never really see the point," unquote. In other words, studying these pages and memorizing the components of awareness will never replace experiencing it. So encourage yourself by spending time noticing where and what you're feeling in your physical body. This is the initial step toward achieving the consciousness that Lao Tzu speaks of. The mystical techniques for achieving immortality are revealed only to those who have dissolved all ties to the gross worldly realm of duality, conflict, and dogma. So said Lao Tzu. This is a telling message. I know that I see myself as an immortal being who receives guidance on awareness specifically because I let go and dissolve most of my ties to the world of duality, conflict, and dogma. The excitement of living from this perspective is beyond anything I can describe. It reminds me that I do exist in a place of all things are possible, and I apply this consciousness to all of my old thinking habits, and I encourage you to do the same. Know that you are a soul with a body rather than the reverse, and understand that this knowledge is your ticket to changing beliefs that keep you stuck in what Lao Tzu calls your shallow worldly ambitions. Awareness will remind you of who you are capable of becoming. All that you need will appear when you're vigilant about replacing old thinking habits with it. These days, the words infinite possibilities flash on my inner screen almost every waking hour. This phrase continually assures me that nothing is impossible if I can conceive of it and if I'm willing to apply awareness rather than excuses. Awareness allows me to perceive possibilities rather than difficulties, to feel connected to my source of being and see the outcome as working rather than failing. I feel a dazzling rush of excitement when I think about no longer employing all the tired excuses that were handed down to me from my family, my schooling, my religious training, my government, ad infinitum. The messages were similar. These are your limitations. This is what you can do. This is what you can't do. This is the real world of competition and pain and violence and fear and hatred and so on. These ideas strongly influenced me, but I'm here to tell you that I now have a new and welcome outlook on the world of infinite possibilities. When you simply become aware, you cease being a victim to endless mind viruses that seemingly prevent you from accessing your complete fulfillment. You no longer find it difficult to change those familiar thought patterns that prevent you from living at optimal levels of success, happiness, and health. You consciously enjoy the knowledge that memes or genes or anything else in the material world don't have absolute control over you, and who you can become is unlimited. Your first response to any troublesome life situation isn't one of the 18 excuse categories from the last chapter. Rather, you shift to your awareness of awareness and tell yourself, hold on here. There's something beyond what I'm noticing, and I'm going to tap into it first. Madame Blavatsky, who was instrumental in introducing Eastern religions to the West, encouraged this kind of thinking. Here's what she said on the subject. Quote, have patience, candidate, as one who fears no failure, courts no success. Fix thy soul's gaze upon the star whose ray thou art, the flaming star that shines within the lightless depths of ever-being. Unquote. Here are four suggestions for implementing an awareness of awareness. First, develop a mindset that stays open to all possibilities. Refuse to rule out the ability to use awareness as your primary tool for combating long-held thinking habits. By being open to it, you invite higher awareness in. As I've said throughout this chapter, with this new approach, all things are possible, and that leaves nothing out. Secondly, practice using awareness at your own pace, in your own way, in circumstances that crop up throughout your daily life. Practice giving rather than asking for more. Practice being non-judgmental and offering help where you previously offered criticism. Want what you want for yourself even more for someone else, and observe how much better you are in eliminating those old me-first thoughts that have demanded your attention in the past. Third, in childhood, repetition was something you most likely used to reinforce things you were mastering. You can probably recall insisting on someone reading and rereading a book or story until you knew it by heart. In that spirit, repeat this affirmation over and over to have it solidify and move from your subconscious habitual mind to the forefront of your conscious mind. Quote, I let go of old ways of thinking and I access awareness. And fourth, when you feel compelled to use an excuse, become aware that you no longer need to. Simply become aware of this new awareness. Chapter 5, the second principle, alignment. Quote, it is only by becoming godlike that we can know God. And to become godlike is to identify ourselves with the divine element, which in fact constitutes our essential nature, but of which, in our mainly voluntary ignorance, we choose to remain unaware. That's by Aldous Huxley from The Perennial Philosophy. Ego-dominated excuses wouldn't exist if we were able to adopt Huxley's advice above, which paraphrases Plato and perfectly sums up the value of this second excuses-begone principle. Were we to become godlike and be steadfast in thinking in harmony with the universal source of being, which is our essential nature, then we simply wouldn't need to employ ego-dominated excuses. Alignment is a basic truth that functions as your personal code, unlocking the mystery of manifesting anything into your life. You can learn how to readjust your thinking so that it aligns with your essential nature and puts you in harmony with source energy. This symmetry will allow whatever you'd like to flow to you. Stay aligned with source and enjoy exploring an excuse-free life. At this very moment, you can begin to practice alignment. First, notice your thoughts and watch out for any of those habitually misaligned ones. Then, just implement a different way of thinking that replaces the old habit. When you shift your thinking to align with an awareness of your essential nature, the energy is actually measurable. It turns out that we live in a universe that is all energy. Everything vibrates, and the frequency of those vibrations determines how everything appears, including our body, which senses our thoughts and has energy components that can be measured. Our physical universe and everything in it is a vibrating machine. The act of creation itself, bringing non-being into being, is a vibrational frequency. Personally, this realization has been an awesome awakening for me, leading to my knowing in my heart that I have the power to harmonize with the vibrational source and can activate whatever I focus on, and I believe that this ability is within every being. There's an invisible energy field from which everything originates. Through the first excuses begone principle of awareness, you can realign with the same vibrational frequency of that energy field and access what I call divine guidance. Why? Because of what seems to be a law of the universe. Two frequencies that are alike are attracted to each other, and those that are unalike don't even recognize each other. Staying vigilant and continuously monitoring all thoughts causes you to notice what frequency you're transmitting and receiving. When you perceive that a thought is out of alignment, you can correct it. By doing so, you activate divine guidance because you're now thinking at the same frequency as source energy. Again, in the words of Lao Tzu some 2,500 years ago, quote, Relinquish the notion that you are separated from the all-knowing mind of the universe. Then you can recover your original pure insight and see through all illusions. The breath of the Tao speaks, and those who are in harmony with it hear quite clearly. Unquote. Note that Lao Tzu urges us to see that this is a recovering project, that is, the rediscovery of our original nature, and that our goal is to simply harmonize with the Tao, or God Source, in our thinking. So how does the Tao think? If you could measure such a thing, you'd see that Source energy is a creating, giving, abundant, loving, joyful, non-judgmental, all things are possible, invisible mechanism. It is always giving, always serving, always an endless supply. It isn't really doing anything, yet nothing is left undone. It manifests being from non-being at a certain frequency. Your job is to align with this frequency while simultaneously disabling the old, slower, ego-dominated thought frequencies. Being stuck in lack, busyness, lost opportunities, bad luck, and so on is a misalignment with the frequencies of your original nature. I'm sure that you'd prefer being in a state of rapport with the all-creating divine mind as opposed to being stuck in the muck of excuses. Excuses are all misalignments. Listen back to Chapter 3 and consider what those 18 excuses I delineated say to you. Go down the list and you'll see that they all focus on what can't be done or why it has never happened. The only thing an excuse gives you is an option out of the life that you'd like to live. Words like difficult, risky, can't, not strong, not smart, rules, too big, too complicated, these all excuse you from being the kind of person you'd like to be and were destined to become. Now consider how Source energy seems to operate. Does it really seem that it's possible for God or divine mind to think in it can't be done ways? Of course not. The logic seems abundantly clear to me. Harmonize with energy that can do anything and everything, for this is your original nature. Excuses are evidence that you've discarded a way of thinking that's all-powerful for one that's all-limiting. In other words, it's imperative that you decrease ego-dominated thinking, which offers you mostly excuses, in favor of thinking that's aligned with all things are possible. One of the most common kinds of habituated self-debilitating ideas concerns money. I don't have enough money is a misaligned thought because money is in inexhaustible supply in the world. There is so much of it, in fact, that it would be impossible to create a calculator large enough to even count it. Now, in order to receive what is being transmitted, frequencies of thought have to match up. Thought energy is picked up by a receiver tuned into the same frequency. So if Source energy is transmitting at 95.1 FM, tuning into 610 AM isn't going to transmit what you want to hear. Likewise, it's impossible to pick up on what universal Source energy is transmitting if you stay misaligned and don't change frequencies to tune to it. Just sit for a moment and let these thoughts be received right now. You came from a source that has unlimited abundance. It is still generating that same idea today. You merely left it behind. But when you return to those frequencies of your source, you'll start to recognize them again. They'll begin to sound familiar to you, and ultimately, you'll be back in harmony singing the music that you sang long before you acquired an ego and began your journey of misalignment. While I'm using the example of money here, this logic applies to all the habitual thoughts or excuses you use to explain why your life isn't the way you claim to envision it. Therefore, I need to be healed is a vibrational match to I don't have access to perfect health, and God is withholding his healing power from me. You are a physical extension of the source of life, and that source is nothing but well-being. But you can't access this well-being when you vibrate to a different frequency. I need someone to live up to my expectations and to love me in the way I want to be loved in order to be happy is another common misaligned thought. Yet Source energy is only about love. As Meister Eckhart wrote in the 13th century, quote, all God wants of thee is for thee to go out of thyself and let God be God in thee, unquote. So come on, wake up. Just let Source energy be Source energy in you. And Source energy has no excuses built into it. It simply says that you are love and you are loved. And all you have to do to get this is to be a vibrational match to love. Or as the prayer of St. Francis puts it, where there is hatred, or anything else that is not of Source, let me sow love. When you become that vibrational match and align yourself in this way, you'll see your desires begin to manifest for you immediately. Alignment is awareness in action. You may recall from the previous chapter that awareness is a representation of your highest self, the self that truly knows that it is a physical extension of the divine, the invisible source of all. Alignment represents movement into this state of awareness. Alignment is a verb. It connotes action, be it the action of literally changing old thinking habits so that they match up to your awareness, or the actual shifting of behavior so that you think and act as a God-realized, excuses-begone being. When you become aligned, your thoughts are no longer focused on what you don't want, but rather on what you intend to manifest as a co-creator with Source. The best way to begin retraining your mind is to consciously think in aligned ways, so consider the following. Your universal source of being never thinks in terms of what is missing. Do you? It never thinks in terms of what it can't have or do. Do you? It never thinks in terms of what has never happened before. Do you? It never thinks in terms of what others will think, say, or do. Do you? It never thinks in terms of bad luck or the way things have always been. Do you? Every time you have a thought that extends to a conversation with others about what is missing, what shortages you have, your bad luck, what always has been, how others don't understand you, and so forth, you're practicing a misaligned excuses mentality. But remember that your mission is to shift into the action state of realigning. This reminds me of a story I was told by a minister on Maui. It seems that there was a family who had a very rambunctious 5-year-old, and the parents were deeply concerned that he might inadvertently cause harm to his new baby brother. One night, while they looked into the nursery to ensure the safety of their sleeping infant, they overheard their eldest son ask his brother, "Would you please tell me what God is really like? I think I'm forgetting." Indeed, most of us have forgotten what our source of being is like, and it's particularly noticeable in the excuses we habitually make. It's my contention that the universe not only will but must provide you with what you conceive of. So if you complain about what's missing from your life, including the money that you believe to be in short supply, you'll be offered experiences that match that energy. When you say, "I love my job, but I'll never get rich at it," you're aligning with a frequency that will give you what you think. That is why I believe the rich often get richer. It's certainly been true for me since I left poverty behind some 60 years ago. By staying focused on what I intend to create, by believing that the universe is all-providing, and by knowing that I'm worthy of the unlimited beneficence of the source of being, I just keep attracting prosperity to myself. And by being unattached to what shows up, which means that I have no desire for more and more, I'm able to let it go easily. What remains a mystery to so many remains a simple truth to me. Stay in a state of gratitude and let the awesome yet unexplainable Tao proceed to do nothing and yet leave nothing undone. Rather than asking for more, which implies shortages and therefore creates a vibrational match to more shortages, focus on what you have and how thankful you are for everything that has shown up in your life. To that end, keep in mind a happiness index that was recently taken for different countries around the world. It turns out that Nigeria, which is one of the poorest of nations with the least modern of conveniences, came in at number 1 for reports of happiness among the people there. The U.S. ranked 46th out of 50, despite having one of the highest standards of living in the world. Apparently, the emphasis in Nigeria isn't on the mantra of the ego, which demands more and more and more. Emphasizing needing more has built within it the idea of shortage, lack, and I don't have enough. Consequently, when you think more, you become a vibrational match to experiencing more shortage in your life, like it or not. Thinking alignment at all times. When you're thinking about the principle of alignment, keep in mind that source energy is ever present, and that you always have the power to bring yourself into harmony with who you really are. And who you really are is a higher awareness than your earthbound form. Just this simple idea, that you're not an ego-based self, but rather divine energy in physical form, will help readjust your energy. Once you recognize your divinity, you'll shift out of misaligned thought patterns. Such thinking focuses on what's wrong or missing, what others have told you are your limitations, what always has been, what used to be, and so on. Since everything comes in response to the vibration of energy, shift out of the lower vibrations and into the vibration of Source. It's already here. I just need to connect to it. Nothing can stop my creative ideas from materializing. I've banished all doubt. I'll soon be seeing evidence of my manifestations everywhere. Now, this is a new kind of thinking. While it may sound too simplistic and naive for you, I'm encouraging you, as strongly as I know how, to give this retraining of your mind a chance. Note that the strength of non-physical energy is flowing everywhere. It's in you, but it's also in every tree, every flower, every bug, every planet, and everything that you want to attract to your life. The non-physical energy is pure, positive oneness, which only your thoughts can disconnect from or misalign with. It flows everywhere at once, and it's always creating, always loving, and always animating life. The only thing that keeps it from working for you is a belief that it can't, it won't, or it never has before. In other words, your excuses. The tremendous value of noticing the alignment of your thoughts will rapidly appear in your awareness. You can summon source energy whenever you slip into a misalignment. Just return to possibilities, manifestations, and your own sense of feeling good, which is just another way of feeling the presence of God. When you find it difficult to move into this alignment attitude, put more attention on your feeling self concerning your desires. For example, if that same old shortage of money surfaces, you may find that you can't stop yourself from being upset about the fact that you still believe that more cash would be your proof that this is working. Try something different and let the energy of what you're feeling reveal what's blocking your alignment. Even if you have to borrow a few $100 just to carry around with you and get the sensation of abundance, feeling prosperous, safe, secure, and positive concerning the flow of money will gradually align you with an abundant source. This has been my way since I was a little boy. I've attracted money into my life because I've always felt prosperous and deserving. That feeling motivated me to act, and I loved carrying groceries or collecting soda pop bottles or mowing lawns. My little bank account was growing while my brothers and friends spoke so often about not having enough cash. Today I'm still mowing lawns and collecting soda pop bottles, only on a much larger stage. And prosperity has never failed to flow into my life. I know in my heart of hearts that the journey from despair to hope and on to prosperity and abundance can be achieved with realigned thinking. I know because I've done it for a lifetime. And I trusted this under circumstances where it never could have been predicted that I'd emerge with unlimited prosperity as my calling card. No one else can do this alignment or realignment exercise for you. You must decide to stay in the feeling of love, prosperity, wellness, or whatever you desire, and let that feeling just flow through you. And remember that you get what you think about, whether you want it or not. Remain thoughtfully in the field of infinite possibilities rather than your negative emotions. Fear, worry, hate, and shame are indicators of separation from your authentic self in the present moment. When you come back to your authentic self, it will work full-time to deliver to you whatever you think about. Silently repeat the following. I get what I think about, and I'm choosing from here on in to think in harmony with my source of being until it is habitual. This is called alignment. What follows are three suggestions for implementing a realigned way of being. First, test your ability to access divine guidance. Think in harmony with source energy by taking on a small project. Choose any subject, bumblebees, light bulbs, feathers, pennies, anything at all, and do nothing but keep it in your mind. Generate pure, positive energy around this topic. See the feather or the penny showing up and feel good about this occurrence. Let your mind be at living peace with this item. And then become an observer rather than a demander, and notice what happens. By aligning with a field of possibilities in a non-judging, non-demanding, yet totally accepting way, you'll notice the manifestation into your life space of that which you're aligned with in your thoughts. Release any ideas that you're impotent when it comes to co-creating your life. Secondly, practice catching yourself when you're engaged in the habit of negative thinking. Monitor any thought that expresses, it can't, it won't, or it's not my luck, and change it to an aligned thought such as, it will, it must, or it's already here and I know it will arrive on schedule with divine timing. Change these misaligned thoughts or excuses 1 minute, 1 hour, 1 day at a time. And third, affirm, I am aligned with my source in all of my thoughts, and with God, all things are possible. Continuously as many times as you can in a 5-minute period. The act of repetition helps the thought become a habituated method of alignment. Soon you'll emphatically say, excuses, be gone. Chapter 6, The Third Principle, Now. Quote, memories of the past and anticipation of the future exist only now. and thus to try to live completely in the present is to strive for what already is the case. Unquote. That's Alan Watts. You've heard it many times, so often in fact that it's become a cliche. Live in the present. The now is all there is. Forget about the past. It's over. Don't worry about the future. There's only today. While these are familiar refrains, the truth is that living in the now is an elusive activity for virtually everyone. It may be easy to say, but it's very tricky to do day in and day out. And yet, Alan Watts is absolutely correct in the above quotation when he states that it already is the case. That is why living in the present moment is so baffling. Think about the past, and you're not living in the now. But the now is the only thing available for thinking about the past. Live in anticipation of the future, and you're admonished for not being here now. But now is all you have for engaging in that delicious futurizing. Thus, as Alan Watts reminds you, you strive for what already is. To be in the now is really your only option. But the real question isn't how to live in the now, it's how to use the now by being present, rather than wasting it on reflections of the past or concerns about the future. And if you carefully examine the 18 categories of excuses detailed in Chapter 3, you'll discover that none of them apply if you master the art of being present. Ego, excuse-making, and the elusive now. After spending several days preparing to write this chapter, I was trying to focus on its significance when I decided to go for a long swim in the ocean. As I walked toward the water, I noted that I felt some tension in my solar plexus region. It wasn't anything serious, it was just that discomfort I described earlier that I often feel when I have many things to do or decisions to make. At the moment I was about to dive in, my thoughts went back to the reading I'd just finished on the psychology of the now. I decided to see if I could totally immerse myself in the moment, which of course meant that I was already striving for what already is the case, since I have no other moment other than this one. Only this time I'd be fully present, letting everything just be. I wouldn't worry about the ache in my chest, think about how cold the water would be, or which direction the current was flowing, or rehash all the things I had on my current to-do list. I'd simply be in the now. I indeed let everything else go and stayed focused on the instant, the place, and the surroundings. And something strange and wonderful happened. My chest stopped hurting. I loosened up. All of my anxiety dissolved, and I felt totally energized. For the next 60 minutes or so, I moved through the water, staying 100% present. The moment I decided to just be there completely, with all other thoughts pushed aside, the discomfort I was experiencing disappeared. Moreover, I had the most peaceful swim I've ever had, and I emerged from the water fully refreshed. My conclusion is that the present moment is an antidote for the pain and difficulties we experience, which we habitually try to soothe with rationales and explanations. When we plunge ourselves 100% into the now, experiencing it and nothing else, we're on an excuses-begone journey with no need for all of those old, habituated thinking patterns. In fact, excuses are simply what you've developed to explain now moments that are tangled in the past or the future. If you're truly in that blissful presence of the now, there's no desire to alter what is. When your sentences express that it's going to be difficult, or it's going to take a long time, or I'm not smart enough, or I'm too old, you're wasting a present moment with excuses from a not now moment. And when are you having these thoughts? You guessed it, the only time you can have a thought is in the now. So if your present moment is being used up replaying why present moment thinking is incorrect, that is, making excuses, is it available for you to do something constructive? Obviously not. All excuses are avoidance techniques to keep you from taking charge and changing your thinking habits. If you weren't rehashing your excuses, but were instead immersed in the now, you'd be experiencing your own form of the bliss and healing that took place for me during my magical swim. You see, when I removed ego from the moment, I stopped thinking about myself and focused on being fully present. And then I was able to be truly here without ego's excuses. I had plenty of explanations for the tension in my chest, but when I moved totally into the now with no other thoughts, the excuses disappeared, along with the pain. The ego is a false self that believes in its separation. It strives to acquire and to achieve, and it's constantly in search of more. Just as it can't coexist with awareness and alignment, it can't survive in the now. When you luxuriate in the moment, it's impossible to ask for anything else, let alone more. The essence of living in the presence is total acceptance of precisely what is here. Your mind doesn't wander to what used to be, what ought to be, or what's missing, and you don't conjure up excuses. Rather, you have a heightened awareness of experiencing your highest self. You also feel a deep sense of connection to God, who isn't doing anything differently than God was doing an hour or a century ago, or will be doing a millennium from now. Your source energy is always only here and only now. It doesn't know how to be any other way. It has no plans, no regrets, no worries about the future, no guilt over the past. It simply is. And what is God doing? Nothing. And what does God leave undone? Nothing. By staying in the now and in a state of gratitude for all that is and all that you are, you tame the ego and you enter a state where excuses cannot even be considered. What excuse do you need when you're fully present? None. Of what use is ego, that false self, when you're with your source in the moment? Don't use up the now with thoughts of regret or worry. The experience of higher awareness is your reward. With ego in control, virtually every thought is making an excuse, focusing on what always has been or what you fear always will be. By befriending the present moment, you say goodbye to that troublesome ego. The issue isn't whether you choose to live in the now or not, because the basic truth is that it's the only thing that's ever available to live in. The past all occurred in the now. The future, which never comes except as a present moment, is all that's available. The real issue is how you choose to use up the precious moments of your life. You can choose higher awareness and suspend ego-dominated past-future thoughts, eliminating your reliance on excuses. Full immersion into the essence of the now is when you truly come face-to-face with your source of being. This is the great value of learning to become fully present. Befriending the now. Often the now is seen by ego as simply a means to an end, something to be endured to get to a future point. This means never getting to be fully here in the moment, since you're using it up anticipating where you'll be in the future. Of course, the future is endlessly always just ahead of you, as thoughts in your head, setting you up for a life of striving rather than arriving. However, this particular course in Excuses Be Gone takes quite a different stance. Rather than wasting time being annoyed because there's no such planning to do for the future, stop and remind yourself to be here now, as my friend Ram Dass suggests in the title of his famous book. To do so, befriend the now. See it as your ally, the only place you've ever been or ever will be, and do a brief meditation reminding yourself what this life experience is all about. One of my favorite techniques to bring me squarely into alignment with the present is to imagine what all of God's beautiful creatures do in every moment of their existence. They're not concerned with their demise. They bask in the exhilaration of the now. Every moment is fully experienced. I don't see any creatures seemingly hating what they're doing, cursing their lot in life, or arguing with themselves or each other over it. They don't make life an enemy and use up their precious moments in a state of anxiety or depression. Years ago, I was privileged to take part in a safari in the northern part of South Africa. The other members of the group and I were gathered for dinner one evening when we noticed 6 or 7 zebras grazing right outside of our tent. As we got a closer look, I noticed something that I've used ever since to remind me to maintain a friendly relationship with the now, rather than treating it as an obstacle to endure on the way to somewhere else. One of the zebras had been attacked during the night, and its right hind quarter and leg looked as if it had been chewed on by a lion looking for a meal. This beautiful animal seemed to be peacefully grazing completely in the moment, even though one of its legs had almost been chewed off the night before. I thought that if that animal was capable of being fully present under such conditions, how could I suffer anxiety over what might or might not happen in the future, or be upset about what took place in the past? That zebra seemed to be saying, "Hey, this is the only moment I have. This is what it is, and I'm going to live fully in each instant until I leave this plane of existence." While this is an extreme example, it always serves to help me, particularly whenever I'm leaning toward those excuses that I've often employed when I slip into making the present moment an enemy rather than a constant companion. I think of that astonishingly beautiful yet maimed zebra, and I get myself right back to the now. And I'm there in such a way that I don't use it up by being upset over a past event or worrying about what's coming up. Our relationship to the present moment defines our relationship to life itself. One of the great insights I've ever had concerns my experiences of time as the ultimate illusion. I think about it in this way. Whatever has happened in the past, no matter how many years, centuries, or millennia ago, all took place in the now. Just now. There's no way to experience anything other than in the precious present moment. Thus, the idea that it happened in the past must be an illusion, since everything only gets experienced now. The time thing is a grand illusion. The same logic applies equally to the future. Whatever we fantasize about happening then will also only take place in the now. All we get is now. 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 Time is what we seem to be measuring with wristwatches, clocks, and calendars, but in fact, it's all nothing more than a series of present moments. The message, then, in this excuses be gone paradigm is that being in the now will help you overcome all of your explanations for why you aren't living at your highest level. Your relationship to life itself reflects your relationship to the present moment. So if your head is filled with frustrating or angry thoughts about what isn't happening or the way the world looks to you, you're not going to have a very good relationship with life. Yet a dysfunctional relationship with life is really nothing more than a dysfunctional relationship with the present moment. Again, life only gets lived in the now. Rather than seeing your present moment as an obstacle, see it as the supreme miracle. Wayne, this is the only moment you have, is a sentence I often say to myself to keep me on friendly terms with the now. Think about that. The only moment you have. When you realize the significance of this, you'll immediately want to shift into a state of awe and gratitude for it, regardless of what is transpiring. I do this frequently in my yoga practice, particularly when I'm challenged by a difficult posture. Balancing on one leg and holding the other one straight out with my hands cupped beneath the ball of my foot is a challenge that leads me to murmur, "Be here now, Wayne. There's a time for being exhausted, and there will be a time for resting, but it's not here yet, so just stay in the present moment." And of course, it always passes, but the next moment that shows up amazingly also shows up as a now, and the next, and so it goes with every experience of life. Removing judgment. I've discovered that I have greater success with being fully present when I remove judgment from what I'm experiencing. Rather than making an event a bad or a good experience, I find myself simply being in the isness of the moment. That is, what I'm feeling is much more helpful than why it isn't what I think it should be. This is called allowing rather than resisting what is. Even if I wish to change the moment, it's far more useful to allow it without any judgment and then notice everything I can about it. The more I stay out of my good thought, bad thought routine, the more I'm able to just be with it. I love to observe the instant without any judgment. Birds simply allow whatever comes their way, no matter if the wind picks up or the rain comes, and I work at being like one of those fabulous creatures. The way I do so is to ask myself this question, what's happening right here and right now, independent of my opinion about it? Then I notice all that I can take in, the sky, the wind, the sounds, the light, the insects, the temperature, the people, the judgments, everything. I stay free of opinions and just let myself be. In these moments, I don't need an excuse for anything. Even while I sit and write, I'm practicing being present and simply allowing the words to flow through my heart, to my hand, and onto the page with a total absence of judgment. And when I eat my lunch, I work at just being present in a state of gratitude for my food and the experience of eating, rather than using those moments to think about all that I have to do in the evening or passing judgment on the taste, color, or smell of my lunch experience. I try to keep in mind that whenever I react against any form that life takes in the present moment, I'm treating the now as some kind of impediment or even as my enemy. As a child, you knew how to be totally present. I encourage you to become an observer of little unspoiled children. Notice how they don't react to every little disturbance in their world and how they're in the moment and then in the next moment and so on. You can use this kind of non-judgment to practice your new explanation-free identity, total immersion in the present without judging. That is, simply allowing yourself to be, is a great way to rid yourself of those long-held thinking habits that I'm calling excuses. Be without judgment, and you'll never feel the need for some tiresome excuse to use up your precious seconds, such as, it's never happened before, I'm too old, or it will take a long time. Instead, you'll be in the now, welcoming your constant present moment companion, your source of being, which knows nothing of excuses and doesn't know how to be any place but here, now. As one of my spiritual predecessors, Dale Carnegie, once wrote, quote, "One of the most tragic things I know about human nature is that all of us tend to put off living. We are all dreaming of some magical rose garden over the horizon instead of enjoying the roses that are blooming outside of our windows today." Unquote. Become one in the present with all of the roses that show up in your life. Here are a few suggestions for implementing present moment awareness. First, practice becoming aware of your reactions when someone introduces any kind of mental disturbance into your life. Where do your thoughts take you? What do you think about in that instant? You'll probably find that your thoughts are projections into the past or the future, so bring yourself back to the now. As you're receiving the disrupting information, ask, "How am I feeling right now?" instead of, "How am I going to feel later?" or "How did I feel back then?" By giving yourself a gentle reminder in the moment of your discomfort, you'll bring yourself back to what you're experiencing now. Watch as your discomfort dissolves when you experience it in the present. Just keep practicing bringing yourself back to the here and now. And remember as you do so that this is your relationship to life itself. Accept the present moment and find the perfection that's untouched by time itself. And next, give yourself the luxury of learning present moment living by adopting the following two practices, making them a regular part of your daily life. First, meditation. Get rid of the excuses you've used that it's too difficult, you don't have the time or energy, and so forth. Begin today, practicing any form of meditation that appeals to you. You'll discover that you'll become adept at allowing interfering thoughts to flow through in the now, rather than trying to stop or change them. And secondly, practice yoga. Find a studio and give yourself the opportunity to experience this ancient practice. The word yoga means union, and the practice of yoga helps you to rejoin your source and free yourself from many of your useless habitual thoughts. Yoga helps you to look into your soul and to be present. You'll experience the oneness of everything. You'll find peace rather than excuses. Then repeat this affirmation. I choose to stay fully present in the now, and this is the only place that I will come to know God. By repeating this to yourself in silence for a 5-minute period, you reinforce the importance of being a present moment person. Repetition is crucial. Make this a regular practice, and it will ultimately become your way of being. I choose to stay fully present in the now, and this is the only place that I will come to know God. And finally, stay present every second, every minute, and every hour. Every day of your life is full of present moments of infinite value. You won't find God yesterday or tomorrow. Your source is always only here and only now.